So I chose to speak about King Asa of Judah tonight, and I've structured this more like a talk than a class. So I apologize ahead of time for the fact that I probably won't be taking any questions or comments, unless, you know, something's obviously blatantly wrong, then just be like, hey, that's not right. I'll also say that it's not my intent to misinterpret or misconvey any information. And if I do so, I'm truly sorry. The Old Testament can be difficult to read and interpret sometimes. So we find the story of Asa in 1 Kings 15, starting with verse 9. We also can read about him in 2 Chronicles 14. I'm going to go ahead and read. I'm going to go ahead and read the 2 Chronicles 14. Abijah slept with his fathers, and they buried him in the city of David. And Asa, his son, reigned in his place. In his days, the land had rest for 10 years. And Asa did what was good and right in the eyes of the Lord, his God. He took away the foreign altars and the high places and broke down the pillars and cut down the Asherim and commanded Judah to seek the Lord, the God of their fathers, and to keep the law and the commandment. He also took out of all the cities of Judah the high places and the incense altars, and the kingdom had rest under him. He built fortified cities in Judah, and for the land had rest. He had no war in those years, for the Lord gave him peace. And he said to Judah, let us build these cities and surround them with walls and towers, gates and bars. The land is still ours. Because we have sought the Lord our God, we have sought him, and he has given us peace on every side. So they built and prospered, and Asa had an army of 300,000 from Judah, armed with large shields and spears, and 280,000 men from Benjamin that carried shields and drew bows. All these were mighty men of valor. Zerah the Ethiopian came out against them with an army of 1,000,000 men and 300 chariots, and came as far as Maresha. And Asa went out to meet him, and they drew up their lines of battle in the valley of Zephathah and Maresha. Asa cried to the Lord his God, O Lord, there is none like you to help. Between the mighty and the weak, help us, O Lord our God, for we rely on you. And in your name we have come against this multitude, O Lord. You are our God. Let not man prevail against you. So the Lord defeated the Ethiopians before Asa and before Judah, and the Ethiopians fled. And Asa and the people who were with him pursued them as far as Gerar, and the Ethiopians fell until no one remained alive. For they were broken before the Lord and his army. The men of Judah carried away very much spoil, and they attacked all the cities around Gerar, and the fear of the Lord was upon them. They plundered all the cities, for there was much plunder in them. And they struck down the tents of those who had livestock and carried away sheep in abundance and camels, and they returned to Jerusalem. The Spirit of God came upon Azariah, the son of Oded, and he went out to meet Asa and said to him, hear me, Asa, and all Judah and Benjamin. The Lord is with you while you are with him. If you seek him, he will be found by you. But if you forsake him, he will forsake you. For as long as Israel was without a true God and without a teaching priest and without law, but when in their distress they turned to the Lord, the God of Israel, and sought him, he was found by them in those times. There was no peace to him who went out, nor to him who came in, for great disturbances afflicted all the inhabitants of the land. They were broken in pieces, nation was crushed by nation, and city by city, for God troubled them with every sort of distress. But you take courage, do not let your hands be weak, your work shall be rewarded. As soon as Asa heard these words, the prophecy of Azariah, the son of Oded, he took courage and put away the detestable idols from all the land of Judah and Benjamin and from the cities that he had taken in the hill country of Ephraim. And he repaired the altar of the Lord that was in front of the vestibule of the house of the Lord, and he gathered all Judah and Benjamin and those from Ephraim, Manasseh, and Simeon who were residing with them, for great numbers had deserted to him from Israel, and they saw that the Lord his God was with him. They were gathered at Jerusalem in the third month of the 15th year of the reign of Asa. They sacrificed to the Lord on that day the spoil that they had brought, 700 oxen, 7,000 sheep. They had entered into a covenant to seek the Lord, the God of their fathers, with all their heart and with all their soul. but that whoever would not seek the Lord, the God of Israel, should be put to death, whether young or old, man or woman. They swore an oath to the Lord with a loud voice and with the shouting and trumpets and with horns. And all Judah rejoiced over the oath, for they had sworn with all their heart and had sought him with their whole desire. And he was found by them, and the Lord gave them rest all around. Even Maacah, his mother, King Asa removed from being queen mother because he had made a detestable image for Asherah. Asa cut down her image, crushed it, and burned it at the brook Kidron. But the high places were not taken out of Israel. Nevertheless, the heart of Asa was wholly true all his days. And he brought into the house of God the sacred gifts of his father and his own sacred gifts, silver and gold in vessels. And there was no more war until the 35th year of the reign of Asa. In the 36th year of the reign of Asa, Baasha, king of Israel, went up against Judah and built Ramah, and that he might permit no one to go out or come in to Asa, king of Judah. Then Asa took silver and gold from the treasures of the house of the Lord and the king's house and sent them to Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, who lived in Damascus, saying, "There was covenant between you and me, as there was between my father and your father. Behold, I am sending to you silver and gold. Go break your covenant with Baasha, king of Israel, that he may withdraw from me." And Ben-Hadad listened to King Asa and sent the commanders of his armies against the cities of Israel. And they conquered Ijon, Dan, Abel-Maim, and all the store cities of Naphtali. And when Baasha heard of it, he stopped building Ramah and let his work cease. Then King Asa took all Judah, and they carried away the stones of Ramah and its timber with which Baasha had been building, and with them he built Geba and Mizpah. At that time, Hanani the seer came to Asa, king of Judah, and said to him, "Because you relied on the king of Syria and did not rely on the Lord your God, the army of the king of Syria has escaped you. Were not the Ethiopians and the Libyans a huge army with very many chariots and horsemen? Yet because you relied on the Lord, he gave them into your hand. For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to give strong support to those whose heart is blameless towards him. You have done foolishly in this. From now on, you will have wars." Then Asa was angry with the seer and put him in the stocks in the prison, for he was enraged with him because of this. And Asa inflicted cruelties upon the people at that same time. The acts of Asa from first to last are written in the book of the kings of Judah and Israel. In the 39th year of his reign, Asa was diseased in his feet, and his disease became severe. Yet even in his disease, he did not seek the Lord, but sought help from physicians. And Asa slept with his fathers, dying in the 41st year of his reign. They buried him in the tomb that he had cut for himself in the city of David. They laid him on a fire that had been filled with various kinds of spices prepared by the perfumer's art, and they made a very great fire in his honor. So the story of Asa follows up after King Abijah's reign. Abijah waged war against the northern kingdom, and just like his father Rehoboam, he did not follow the paths of righteousness, 1 Kings 15. Instead, Abijah, with the help or influence of his mother Maacah, scattered idols throughout the kingdom and engaged in cult practices. Abijah had a son named Asa, the focus of my study, who became king of Judah when his father Abijah died. Considering his family heritage and the dominance of evil in and around him, it would be expected that Asa was strongly influenced to follow in that same direction, but he didn't. We're not told what or who exactly influenced him towards the good. We really don't know, and I won't speculate on that. But we do know that Asa, in his growing up years, made choices and decisions that molded his character towards godliness. He was probably only around 20 years old when he became king, but he showed a wisdom that defied his youth. He determined that his reign would be marked by an adherence to the old faith and a rejection of the idolatry and heathenism practiced by the three preceding kings. He removed from the kingdom every trace of heathenism as much as he possibly could, destroying the places of idol worship and removing the images and idols. To be able to do this, he had to first deal with his grandmother, Maacah, who still had influence and presence in the kingdom. He degraded her position and deprived her of all authority that she had exercised for so long through both her husband's and her son's reign, but no more. God gave Asa a period of 10 years of peace during which he cleansed the land of evil and focused on reestablishing a godly reign. Then came a day when an enemy army threatened his kingdom, a huge Ethiopian army. Asa gathered his comparatively smaller army to meet his enemy. Now, just for some comparison and context, this was not a tiny army. King Asa's so-called small force of fighting men would be approximately the equivalent of the entire populations of Des Moines, Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, and Sioux City, all marching to war together. A little over 500,000 mighty men of valor strong, and he was still considered to have a small army. His opponent was Zerah, the Ethiopian. He commanded a 1,000,000-man army with a side contingent of 300 chariots. These ancient battles were often massive and very deadly. 2 Chronicles 14:11 tells us that Asa prayed to God, asking for his help and victory, a lovely prayer in which he acknowledges God's strength to help and his declaration of his trust and reliance on God. It needed to be a God work, since only with God fighting for him could he possibly have won the battle. Judah was victorious. It says that God defeated Zerah and his army fled, and that Asa and Judah pursued them and slaughtered them to the last man, then proceeded to go through their lands and plunder all of their cities, and took their treasures and livestock and brought it back to Jerusalem. After their victory, Asa was on his way home with the armies of Judah when he was confirmed by God, who sent a prophet to him with a message. The message was that he and his people were under God's favor and would continue to be as long as they continued to be faithful servants, to not be lax in their efforts, but to be strong and determined. That must have really encouraged Asa, since his desire was to serve God with all his heart, and to have God's praise publicly proclaimed must have been exactly what he wanted. Under his influence, all the kingdom loudly confirmed their intent to seek the Lord God of their fathers with all their heart and with all their soul, as it says in 2 Chronicles 15:13. I probably did that earlier too. When the northern kingdom saw what was happening in Judah, many came over to join them. The king of Israel, Baasha, of course, was hardly pleased that his people were defecting to the kingdom of Judah. He was determined to put up a fortified city or wall, not really clear on what Ramah was, but it was called Ramah, at his southern border, that he would block the entrance into Judah and to put a stop to the immigration from Israel to Judah. Baasha proceeded to fortify this position. Asa realized that the enemy must be dislodged. They could not possibly tolerate having a hostile force in Judea, as it was a threat to Jerusalem. Asa knew that he had to do something, but did not trust his own ability or the strength of his own army to defeat and remove the enemy at his border. Something happened here. Asa, up to this point, had done what was right in the eyes of the Lord. And the Lord had even sent a prophet to confirm to him that God was pleased with him. He had prayed about a previous battle, and the Lord had answered and given him a resounding victory against similar odds. But now he seemed to forget all of that. Instead of again calling on God's help, he sought the help of the Syrian king Ben-Hadad, the most powerful monarch in the region at the time. He purchased his friendship with gifts and treasure from the temple. Asa was again successful in battle with Ben-Hadad's help, and he tore down the fortification that Baasha had erected. On his triumphant return home, he was again met by a prophet of God with another message, but this one was not as favorable as the first. The prophet Hanani rebuked him for his lack of faith in calling Ben-Hadad to his aid instead of trusting God. God told him he had done foolishly, 2 Chronicles 16:9. He lost his temper with Hanani, who had effectively destroyed his pride in how easily and well he had gained the victory without losing a drop of Jewish blood. Asa felt his success justified his actions. His reaction to God's displeasure is recorded in 2 Chronicles 16:10. He was angry. He had Hanani arrested and thrown into prison. About this time, it's recorded that Asa also oppressed some of the people, as it says in 2 Chronicles 16:10. And we are told in the end of his life, he was diseased in his feet, and once again, he did foolishly in seeking the help of man instead of asking for help of help, instead of asking for help from God. An interesting side detail, the meaning of the name Asa is physician. At the end of his life, he turned towards physicians and healers instead of God. So whether that is irony or prophecy, I just think it's interesting. And yet, he was given the positive epitaph that he did right in the eyes of the Lord, as David his father, and his heart was perfect all his days, as it says in 2 Chronicles 15 and 17. And it is said about his son, Jehoshaphat, that he walked in all the way Asa his father, he turned not aside from it, doing that which was right in the sight of the Lord. 1 Kings 22 and 43. Although Asa does start off his race well, he kind of fizzles out near the end. No doubt, the story of Asa takes a weird turn. Often in the Bible, we'll see those such as Moses and Gideon having faltering faith at first, which then turns into something more solid as they see the Lord's power working. But Asa does the opposite. Even though he saw God's protection against the Ethiopians, he gets cold feet against the northern kingdom of Israel and turns to foreign aid instead of to the Lord. Christians can learn a great deal from this ruler who started with a bang and ended with a foot infirmity. In high school, most of my friends worked extremely hard until their senior year. They caught something known as senioritis. Their grades plummeted and they put the possibility of colleges accepting them into jeopardy. Christians can encounter that same problem. We may begin our Christian journey fully on fire for God, only to end up embittered, selfish, and untrusting of the Lord's promises towards the end of our lives. Paul commands us to run the race of our Christian journey well in 1 Corinthians 9:24 through 27. I was talking to my little brother Elijah not too long ago, and for those of you who don't know him, he's very athletic and he ran cross country and track in high school. He agreed that the most important parts of the race are the beginning and the end. If you start strong, then you have much less to make up for during the race, and although you do want to keep a consistent pace in the middle, towards the end of the race, a good runner will sprint to the finish line, giving every ounce of energy they have remaining towards achieving the goal at the end. Don't let a spiritual leg cramp make you give up the race. No matter how hard life gets or how much aging takes its toll, we can't grow lazy in our race. Asa isn't the only king to get into trouble for relying on foreign aid. You can read about Hezekiah and Jehoiakim, for example. Yes, God does place circumstances, people, and opportunities in our path, but we cannot rely on them for our salvation. This looks different for everyone. Often, God can take away whatever we want to use as a crutch so that we will lean into his plan more. For some, they might rely too much on money or finances. Others may go to a counselor or friend for spiritual or moral advice before they even think about looking at what the Lord says about it in the Bible. No matter what crutch we use, we need to avoid Asa's actions. We can't rely on others to save us, especially not ourselves. He started from a rough place. Both his grandma and his father had corrupted the kingdom, and if he followed the pattern that we see oh so often with Israel's kings, he would follow in their footsteps. Instead, he destroys the evil idols in the land and introduces religious reforms. He stops his family legacy short and creates a new one. We can learn a great deal from this man from the southern kingdom of Judah. Asa teaches us to finish our races well, to rely on God alone, and to not let family history serve as an excuse for bad behavior. Many Christians may come from broken homes or backgrounds, but God is greater than any past circumstance. And through him, we can shine his light to a great number of people needing to experience hope and joy. I think a lesson Asa could teach us today is how easy it is as we grow in success to begin to trust in ourselves and our own abilities more instead of trusting wholly on God. One of the most precious things that we can offer God, in fact, the only thing that he does not have if we don't give it to him, is our trust in him. And scripture tells us that to God our faith is indeed precious, 1 Peter 1:7. God brings circumstances and trials into our life to test us. How much will we trust in God? How solid is our faith in trusting him to guide us in all of our ways? Let Asa's life story inspire us to not fall into the self-reliance trap that shifts the faith from being God-focused to man-focused or self-focused. In Hebrews chapter 3, verse 6, we are encouraged to hold fast to the confidence and the rejoicing of the hope firm to the end. And in Hebrews 10:38-39, it says, "Now the just shall live by faith, but if anyone draws back, my soul has no pleasure in him. But we are not of those who draw back to destruction, but of those who believe in the saving of the soul." There's no reason why anyone should not stay the course and with patience complete the race yet before him. Hebrews 12:1. At times the obstacles seem overwhelming and we can be tempted to give up. At other times we allow the cares of this life to blur the vision of the incredible potential promised to each one of us. Note Hebrews 2:1. Therefore we must give the more earnest heed to the things we have heard, lest we drift away. Will we drift away and neglect so great a salvation? The choice is ours. But if we do our part, God's promises stand sure and steadfast, being confident of this very thing, that he who has begun a good work in you will complete it until the day of Jesus Christ. Philippians 1:6. I've heard a saying, and I can't remember where I heard it, but it goes like this. It's not important how many storms you encounter and successfully navigate in the sea of life, but whether you bring the ship into harbor at the end of the journey. Don't give up. Stay the course. Finish the race. Let your faith and trust in God endure to the end.